listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Evelyn Wan, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, where is the sweetest treat in Evanston? Northwestern's thoughts on Bridgerton's newest season. A throwback to 2016, and a Super Bowl Sunday preview. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. Looking for a treat or baked good around town? Olivia Payne explored Evanston's cookie offerings to find out which one is the strongest sweet.
Evanston residents are no stranger to the call of sweet treat cravings, and the town always has an answer. A new option dropped in January as Crave Cookies opened their doors on Church Street. The addition of another cookie chain got me wondering, who's baking up the best cookie in Evanston? I grabbed two friends and hit 7 of the city's best coffee shops, bakeries, and late-night sweet shops to put them to the test.
Can I get a chocolate chip cookie?
Just one?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I roped in Weinberg second-year Sandy Catalan and Medill second-year Sapria Kello. Together, we drafted a point system that balanced texture, presentation, chocolate quality, size-to-cost ratio, and overall satisfaction. First, we headed north. After a short metro trip up to Central Street, we stopped inside Poplar Pastries, DeSalvo's Pizza, Backlot Coffee, and Leonidas Chocolate Cafe. Right around the corner from the station was Poplar Pastries, where we tried out their $4 chocolate chip cookie. Though the cookie was large, we found it still left a lot to be desired.
I feel like the main good thing about it is that it's really big, but it's really thin. You don't really get to taste the flavor of the cookie dough because it's all been like cooked on. You know, yeah. It's so thin and crispy.
Poplar's shortage of sweetness brought it to number 6 on our ranking. Yet, a notable standout up north was Backlot Coffee. Its large chocolate chunk cookie comes in at $3.25, one of the best deals of all the cookies.
The chocolate is really good.
The edge has a nice crunch.
Like, it's a little bit of a darker chocolate, yeah. But it's still fine because the cookie dough is really, like, a good level of sweetness.
This one's not overly sweet either.
It gets the job done. It'll probably fill you up a little bit.
With lots of chocolate but less overall flavor, it came in at number 4 on our ranking. Next, we stopped by DeSalvo's Pizza, whose brown butter chocolate chip cookie cost $3.75.
You can kind of taste the brown butter, but not really. If that's what you want, you might be a little disappointed. The dough itself doesn't really have a strong flavor. It doesn't taste like cookie dough.
I think just, like, the dough is really odd and, like, savory. And then the chocolate has the, like, little bitterness of our chocolate. So having them together, it's not an exciting experience.
It's like not sweet enough.
With good chocolate but a little too much saltiness, DeSalvo ended up at the bottom of our ranking. Our favorite of these shops came as a surprise. After getting unlucky at Hune, an independent Evanston bakery, we stopped in to Leonidas Chocolate Cafe. The chain has 3 locations in Illinois specializing in Belgian chocolate and French pastries. It offers a Belgian Grand chocolate chip cookie for $4.95. This cookie was definitely the most eye-catching of the lineup.
Sapria's really excited.
It's massive.
There's like 2 different types of chocolate. It's thick.
It's thicker than Poplar, but probably the same like size.
The cookie was huge, chewy, and perfectly chocolatey, a clear standout. Ultimately, we gave it 2nd place in our ranking. We headed back to downtown Evanston, where we tried Benison's Bakery, Insomnia Cookies, and the new Crave Cookies. Insomnia is a classic student go-to. It's close by and open late. It's also a cheap option. The chocolate chunk cookie came in at only $2.99. Still, it was noticeably smaller than the rest of the lineup.
The outside is really crunchy. I think it cooled down a little bit. It's not as warm as normal, but the chocolate's still really melty.
The cookie was ready fast and warm, but it didn't totally blow us away. The late night cookie chain just barely beat out Backlot for the number 3 spot on our list. Benison's Bakery is another local favorite for their variety of fresh baked goods. We tried their large chocolate chip cookie for $3.65, another great deal.
It's definitely like a very spread out cookie. It's similar to Poplar in that way.
That's true. Very thin, very crunchy.
I would say the flavor of the chocolate is, like, not that strong.
No, the flavors in general, like, aren't that strong.
We found that Benison's was missing that special sweetness and softness to take it over the top, bringing the cookie into 5th place. We ended our tour at Crave Cookies. Their $4.99 chocolate chip cookie is the largest on our list, and it also made the biggest impression.
This looks really good. It's really warm, really big. It's probably one of the biggest cookies. Like, I don't think I could eat this in one full sitting. The chocolate's really good. It's like sweet. It's sweeter than a lot of the other ones we've had, but it's not like overly sweet.
Beating Leonidas by just 1 point, Crave took home the number one spot on our list with its great balance of sweetness, warmth, and chocolate. So if you've been looking for a sign to head over to Crave and try out one of its massive cookies, here it is. But if you want to stick to your local favorite, we don't blame you. There's sweet treat gems all around Evanston that are definitely worth taking a bite out of. For WNUR News, I'm Olivia Payne.
Netflix's Regency-era drama Bridgerton is back, with part 1 of season 4 premiering last Thursday, January 29th. The new season continues the show's mix of romance, orchestral pop covers, and fairy tale renditions, and it's already sparking reactions from fans in Northwestern's campus. WNUR's Dara Simi Bankali has the story.
Dearest gentle reader, if you heard that before, then you've probably watched Bridgerton or been in the same room as someone watching the beloved Netflix show.
What I loved about Bridgerton, what I loved about producing, I think a lot of it is, as a writer, being able to actually control like what you see and try to get as close to what you have in your head.
That's Janet Lin, a producer and television writer from Bridgerton Season 1. She came to Northwestern for a Q&A the day after Season 4's Part 1 release. After working on multiple different shows and projects, she says,
"And that is so much fun to be able to like kind of go through the steps to bringing your characters, these characters that you've nurtured in your room, like to kind of to life." So yeah, that's the pleasure of being a writer-producer.
Lynn said her favorite season was Season 1, but she's biased since she worked on it, of course. But for McGill freshman Josie Belfer, Season 2 remains her favorite season even now.
Honestly, to me, nothing can like compare to the second season, because that one was just like so amazing in my opinion. But I really like the new season so far. I like how it's going, and I'm looking forward to the release of the second half of the season. Hopefully, that will be good as well.
And as for favorite scenes, Belfer enjoys the opening scene of the masquerade ball when the focus for this season, Benedict Bridgerton, first meets his love interest, Sophie Beck.
So I really like this sort of moment where Benedict and the like love interests of this season meet, because they like, it's kind of like a Cinderella story, and I think it sets like just the setting is very nice, and I think they took some of like the feedback from the previous season in terms of like just like making it more kind of like time period accurate, and it all looks very like pretty.
Madel sophomore Linda Montejo-Bartolone agreed.
I hadn't watched Bridgerton before, but this season definitely has me hooked, and I'm excited for the next part. I definitely like it when they were all in the ball with the masks. I thought it was like very exciting, and it was interesting seeing like all the characters return, since I think that was the first time we saw them all there together.
Bridgerton is well known for its use of modern songs with a classical twist, in order to fit the historical time period. Belfer believes these songs give the series a whole new meaning.
Yeah, I think it's really cool how they do the sort of like classical covers of modern songs. I think that's also like what I was saying before, kind of about like how the characters are really like modern and like relatable to a modern audience, but also like they're set in this like exaggerated like beautiful historical time period. And I think with the songs, it's like a song will play and it's almost like a little bit funny, because it's like, oh, okay, like they're playing Ariana Grande, but like a classical version.
Weinberg sophomore Jamila Dewana agrees with this sentiment.
I think a lot of the music is like modern songs that have become instrumental, so it's kind of a connection of like you're in a period piece, but it also does connect you back to your real life, which is pretty cool. And honestly, I think it's one of the best parts of Bridgerton.
However, not everyone shares the same opinions as Belfer and Dewana. Montejo Bartolone has a different take.
I think it's annoying when pieces on time periods try to please a modern audience by using like modern music.
Part 2 of Season 4 will come out on February 26th, and viewers will be able to find out how Benedict and Sophie's love story unfolds. For WNUR News, I'm Darismi Bankole.
Bottle Flipping, The Mannequin Challenge, Tyler Oakley, Killer Clowns. 2016 was for real a time. But as crazy as it was, some of us are feeling nostalgic for the era. Yumi Talud has the story.
2026 is the new 2016. At least, that's what people are saying. There's been this trend going around, maybe you've seen it, of people posting themselves from 10 years ago, and I am absolutely eating it up. My contribution is this one picture of me at the 21 Pilots concert in 6th grade. I'm wearing a blurry face shirt that I got from Hot Topic, duh, and I have a red and black flannel tied around my waist. I'm wearing a red beanie that I just picked up from the merch stand, and it's holding my hair in a fake side bang situation that shows off my terrible grown-out bleach job. I have on these pleather Doc Martens, and to top it all off, I'm hitting a double peace sign pose that covers half of my face. I was cringe, but I was free. That's what seemed to be the universal motto at the time. We had BuzzFeed quizzes, Musical.ly, bottle flipping, Harambe, and of course, 21 Pilots. Truly, never a dull moment. And now, with 2016 being back in the mainstream, I wanted to relive that era and know what people were up to at the time. Here's communication sophomore Vincent Perez.
2016, I was 10 years old. First half of the year, I was in fourth grade, then I went into fifth grade. And it was in fifth grade that I started my slime business. You know, as most of the world was at that time, I was obsessed with slime. I wanted nothing more than to make slime every day, every single kind. For my birthday, I remember I actually asked for Daiso clay so that I could make butter slime because whatever the like Crayola air dry didn't work.
Wow. So you were getting fancy with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I needed top tier ingredients. My slime business itself actually wasn't really that successful. I think I had like 3 customers and 2 of them I gave away for free as birthday gifts. But I think I made $5. So, you know, big money, big money.
Slime wasn't the only thing Perez was obsessed with at the time. That was when Hamilton came out, no?
Oh, yeah. That was Hamilton. Oh, yeah. That was fifth grade because I... Oh, wow. I just remembered that. Yeah, big Hamilton time. For a school project, we were learning about, you know, the U.S. government and the Revolutionary War. And, like, we made up a rap between Jefferson and some other character as, like, a group project. I'm sure it sounded awful, but my fifth grade teacher loved it. And I remember we had to make a graphic for the project. So we made a poster and we cut out the heads of the portraits of these US, I don't know, founding fathers and pasted it on there with like their lines next to them.
Oh my God. So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home sweet home. Most things about that era we left in the past, but some still refuse to budge. Communication third year Ricky Wu is still an avid player of Pokemon Go, a small but mighty community.
There was the Pokemon World Championships in Anaheim, California. Whoa. This past summer. It was crazy because it was people coming from all around the world. And obviously, like, the game, like, Pokemon Go, they had to make a lot of, like, exclusive features for people that were there to make it, like, really cool. And I think that was pretty awesome, like, that really felt like I was back in 2016 because it's like Disneyland, that area, and you could see the number of people that were just there playing. It's like if you join like a raid, it would immediately fill up, which is like pretty rare. But there it was like every single one would fill up like instantly.
Pokemon Go never really outright disappeared from the general consciousness, but plenty has. That doesn't stop something from making a comeback 10 years later, though.
In 2016, the draw to Dan and Phil was, like...
That's communication third year Asherana.
I don't know, like, I had been watching them, and I was, like, this, like, closeted kid, sort of, in my little small white town in Missouri. And Dan and Phil were, like, they weren't, like, together, but they were definitely, like, something was up with them. And I think that they hadn't come out as gay yet, but there was all this fan fiction, and, like, that was when I first started reading fan fiction, too, for, like, other things that I was interested in, and so, like, fan fiction about two, like, sort of popular gay guys that, like, they played video games, which was a big thing for me, that, like, they played The Sims, and I really liked The Sims, and they had this, like, sim household together, and I think that was a big draw for a lot of people, was, like, how on the internet they were, and it was, like, an escape. And then, like, now, I think it's sort of similar, right? Like, Trump's in office, and Hedl rivalry is, like, this escape, which I think is really big for people. Like, Dan and Phil were in some ways kind of mainstream for YouTube, and heated rivalry is also something that's gone, like, kind of mainstream, even if you caught it, like, right at the start. That's another place that's, like, has also been an escape for me personally, because, like, Hudson Williams is, like, he's Asian, and he might not be, like, my Asian, but he is Asian, and he's, like, in this, like, really racy and also full of love gay TV show, and it's, like, an escape from our present.
Not everything that made a comeback from 2016 is as exciting or hopeful, though. Mendel grad student Eleni Tekos remembers when Trump won his first election.
My mom and I went over to a family friend's, like, party. It was like a Hillary party. There was, like, a photo booth, and I think there were, like, you know, like the little, like, cutouts you have for a photo booth where it's, like, on a popsicle stick. Mm-hmm. I think there were, like, Hillary wigs that were, like, on popsicle sticks.
Wow.
There were also, like, I don't know how we got these, but there were, like, cookies with Hillary's face on it. My mom, my aunt, and I were all, like, at a museum, at the museum that my mom worked at the time, and we all took pictures with the Hillary cookie at the museum. It was serious.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I think that was, like, the first time I remember, like, staying up for an election, and I remember, like, very vividly watching all of, like, the states go red when Trump first won in 2016. So that was kind of a core memory for me, and I also remember, and I think this happened again in the 2024 election, where both elections I was like, there's no way that Trump will win, like, there's just, like, no way, because it was 2016, so what, I was like 12, and so I didn't really know anything about politics, I just was like there for the cookies, you know. Mm-hmm. But I remember it was like a very big deal watching all the states go red, and everyone was like crying, and I was like, seems bad, but I don't really know, like, what that means. And then in 2024, I remember thinking, well, you know, we all saw how that happens. Like, there's no way that, like, Trump's going to win again because, you know, everybody hates him and blah, blah, blah. And then he won again.
Shoot. And here we are.
And here we are.
For better or for worse, 2016 is back. But hopefully, we're moving in the right direction. For WNUR News, I'm Yumi Talu.
With Super Bowl Sunday in just 2 days, reporter Savannah Bond sat down with WNUR sports reporter Charlie Jacobs to prepare for the game.
Welcome to WNUR Sports Report. My name is Savannah Bond, and today I'm joined by WNUR Sports' Charlie Jacobs. With just 2 days left before the Patriots and the Seahawks take the field in Santa Clara for Super Bowl 60, let's take a deeper look into the game. Charlie, thank you for joining me.
Yes, it's great to be here. First time collaborating with other WNUR, not WNUR Sports, so this is a new opportunity, a new thing for me, and I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So let's just jump right into it. Super Bowl Sunday coming up, a couple days. What players should viewers focus on throughout the game? Who's going to be the biggest difference maker?
Well, I mean, obviously, you could talk about the quarterbacks and on each team. Like, you could talk about Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who's probably going to win the Offensive Player of the Year. I think this game is a battle of the offensive lines and the defensive lines. It's really a battle of the trenches. Both teams have some really good lockdown cornerbacks. And for the Patriots, Carlton Davis and Christian Gonzalez. For the Seahawks, you have Devin Witherspoon, who's arguably the best cornerback in the league. And then also there, Tariq Woolen, who sometimes is on, sometimes is off. But both teams, it's really going to be whether or not the Seahawks offensive line can hold up, especially with Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas at the tackle spots, really defending, just trying to prevent the edge rush from getting to Sam Darnold, because the Seahawks have done a great job of preventing that this playoff so far. And the Patriots defense has been fantastic, especially in the defensive line.
And what do you see as the biggest vulnerability in each team? What's going to cost the game?
I think in terms of costing the game, it's really going to be, I think it's going to be special teams. Honestly, the reason the Rams didn't win against the Seahawks, you could really boil that down to special teams. If the Rams didn't muff a punt, Seahawks went right and scored on the next play. That was to open the second half. There's a chance it's the Rams playing against the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Anything else fans should look out for during the game?
I would say to fans, a lot of the time when people watch football, and I used to do this myself, you always follow the ball. And while that is was always a fun way to watch football, there's some other fun things, like watching the offensive line is sometimes really fun, just seeing people get absolutely pancaked or seeing how good sometimes offensive linemen or defensive linemen are at getting to the quarterback or preventing people from getting to the quarterback. Sometimes, other times, watch wide receivers matched up with cornerbacks when they start to run their routes, see if they make any moves, because then you could be like, oh, this guy's open, and if the quarterback will find that person, then that too. Or just you watch the defense, you see how they line up and try to guess what they thinking. And I mean, that might also just be because I'm a bit of a football nerd. I love football so much. It's my number one sport in and out. Love NFL, love college football, and really just enjoy the game. It's a weird NFL season. It's going to be a fun Super Bowl, hopefully. Arguably the best game of the season just happened with the Seahawks and Rams, and that might even have been the Super Bowl, because I kind of do think Seattle will win this game. And that's nothing against the Patriots. That's nothing directly towards Seattle. I just think the matchup is better for Seattle. They also had a bye week. This is their third game in a row. The Patriots are playing a fourth game now. And while they both did obviously have the week off this past weekend and week because of the Pro Bowl games, still, I think the Seahawks have a bit of an advantage in this one.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And we'll see you on Sunday.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you again to Charlie Jacobs for joining me. Have a great weekend and enjoy the game. For WNUR News, I'm Savannah Bond.
Now, for a brief look at the forecast. With the exception of a few clouds, tomorrow is looking mostly sunny, with a high of 23 and a low of 19. Sunday gets warmer with temperatures in the mid-20s, with a mix of clouds and sun. Clouds are expected to fully cover the skies by the afternoon. Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. The Evanston Police Department is cautioning the public about a scam regarding individuals impersonating police officers. On February 4th, two victims reported to the Chicago Police Department that they were contacted by a caller who claimed to be an Evanston police officer and demanded payment in cryptocurrency. Any community member who was contacted by someone claiming to be law enforcement should not give away any personal information and immediately contact the Evanston Police Department. A federal judge ruled that the text messages a Border Patrol agent sent to friends and family after shooting a woman 5 times will be released. Border Patrol agent Charles Exum shot Marimar Martinez 5 times on October 4th after she allegedly rammed her car into the agent's vehicles. The state of Illinois has joined the World Health Organization network after the United States formally withdrew last month. Illinois joins California as the second state to join the World Health Organization's Global Outbreak Alert and Response Network. Hong Kong media tycoon Jimmy Lai will be sentenced next Monday, said the city's judiciary. In December, Lai was found guilty of 2 charges of conspiracy to collude with foreign forces and publish seditious materials. He may face up to life in prison. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Georgia Kerrigan, and our reporters are Olivia Payne, Darasimi Bankoli, Yumi Talud, and Savannah Bond. I'm Evelyn Wan. Catch our next newscast Monday, February 9th. Now, back to scheduled programming.